You are listening to episode 93 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, watching CEOs and silicon manufacturers. Episode 93 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July the 7th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my all-American brother, James Furlough.
Hey there! I'm here.
It's true.
Hey, rock.
And American? Proud to be?
Well, American, yeah.
Nice. I'm American, too. Back in America.
Back in America. What time did you get in last night or this morning?
This morning, since I was flying into San Francisco International Airport, I did not get in until I think it was 1:30 when my plane landed, and about 2 o'clock, 2:15 when I got into the car to go home. So it was a bit of a long day. I think all was said and done, it was from when I left the hotel in Lincolnshire, and
Lincolnshire.
Yeah, it's the city of Lincoln in Lincolnshire, which I think is awesome. When I left Lincoln, it was like 7:30, and I got home at 10:30 a.m. local time. So it was it came out to be a 27-hour-long day, which was exciting. And I even got a whole hour and a half worth of sleep at one point.
Nice. Which
was, yeah. So it was good times. Thankfully, the accident at the airport did not hang me up too bad. I made it back safe and sound. And, yeah. It was all right.
That's good. That's good. And your trip was good? You did whatever you needed to do?
Kind of. Enough to leave, which was really the important part.
Understand.
Yeah.
How did your American flag shirt go over?
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. Because I'm thinking this is going to be ridiculous, right? Like, it'll just be the obnoxious American in England. And
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and turns out they all loved it. They thought it was great. They had like this full on Independence Day celebration, which they were like. Like firework display, they had Southern jazz music, and it was like, you know, they're playing the music, and you knew it was Southern music because they had a big old Confederate flag hanging in front of the stage.
That's Southern. I like it. It's funny.
Close, guys. Close. They had like muscle cars that they called classic cars, but like half of them were like modern air cars, just, you know, like modern Mustangs. It was like, you guys, it's so funny, man. It's so funny. The real drive to be American, but like just not quite there.
That's interesting. Huh?
Yeah. And people were taking pictures of me and stuff in my ridiculous shirt. It was great. It was a good time. I had a lot of fun and they seemed to enjoy it. I seemed to enjoy it. Couldn't ask for more. So we hope everybody in our listening audience had a good 4th of July, Independence Day. And that one quote that starts the Declaration of Independence, insert that here. We the people of this nation find it. How does it?
I don't know.
How does it go?
It's not that important.
Yeah. It's like one of the most important sentences written in human rights and self-governments ever. But you're right, not that important. Obviously, it's not that important. We don't know it.
That's because we live it.
That's true.
You don't need to memorize something when you are something.
Exactly.
It's just part of our DNA, so what's to memorize?
Exactly.
Cool. Well, welcome back. Glad that you're safe and sound and ready to rock a podcast.
Definitely. So, this week, as James is subtly implying, like every week, we'll be talking about technology in the corporate opera, or the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he's going to go through.
I do, and I just want to say you're sounding good on the new mic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
You got a little bit of bass there, no more echo. It's sounding good. Sounds good.
Yeah.
And I would also like to disclose that I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Husey Packard. Yes, sir. If you want to follow us throughout the week, see all sorts of cool pictures from England when we're there. You won't get any more if you have to go back in time if you want those. You can follow us on the Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow.
And I am at James Furlow. And you can also follow me, ready for this? It's brand new, at jamesfurlow.com.
Nice. That's
boom.
Awesome.
I finally figured out the whole URL resolving issue. Turns out I was forwarding my old URL through Cloudflare, which was causing all sorts of problems, which is a CDN or a content distribution network. And so they were caching, and Tumblr was hating it. And but anyways, check out jamesfurlow.com. You can see all of my latest clicks and links and updates there.
Nice.
By the way, clicking on About Me and you can learn all about me.
Wow, that's nice. I like those About Me's. If you want to go on to, if you want to get more about the show, like all of our clicks and links and videos and everything we talk about this week, it's a great archive and history of all these cool articles and everything we talk about, including links to the URL and the podcast and videos and whole nine yards. Go to furloughbros.com.
Yeah.
If you go and furloughbros.com, you can get what am I thinking?
I don't know.
You can get all sorts of cool stuff there. Go and check it out. It's pretty awesome.
See the episodes, see the links to the articles.
Yeah.
You can listen to the episodes.
And if you want
subscribe.
If you want, just copy and paste furloughbros.com into your email and then email everybody on your friends list. You don't even need to put a subject or anything. Just send it to them. A certain amount of people are going to click on it and love it, and it's going to be great. So let's go ahead and do that. You know. And then
you get those emails, huh? Where it's just like someone just sends it and it's just the link. That's it.
Yeah. Well, and I never click on them because I'm like, this is probably a virus.
Yeah. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So see,
which makes me wonder. I've had to modify it because I used to send like my title would give it away because I'd give the title of the article, and then I'd be like, this is awesome, check it out, and then the link. And now it's like, I should probably say a little bit more to make sure that they know that this is a personal send, not just a bot or spam.
See, that's the nice part about sending that email with our furloughbros.com in it, though, is that if anybody complains, you can just be like, oh, I got a virus, sorry. I hope you clicked on the link, though.
I don't know why anybody would complain.
Exactly. Yeah. Get great content. It'd be awesome.
Which, by the way, I still think it's hilarious that our dad is, I'm going to put it in quotes, on Pinterest.
Yeah.
Which still equates to him surfing Pinterest on his iPad, taking a screenshot, and then emailing just the screenshot.
Yeah.
And the title is, saw this on Pinterest. Like every time.
That's so funny. Oh, man. This is a brief aside. We got an email complaining about Windows 8 and the fact that the URL was not available for copy and pasting. And I figured what was going wrong this today.
What was with that? Because I'm pretty sure there's a URL.
Somebody, and I won't name names in this because you guys might know our mom and dad, downloaded the Google search app for Windows 8,
okay,
which is an app that lets you just type it in and it brings you to the Google search bar. It's a lot like Chrome, but without any of the functionality of Chrome.
Awesome.
And so you just type into the Google search bar, and it'll give you a list of list of results, and you click on it, and it opens it up as though it were a browser, like it were Chrome, but it's not Chrome because it doesn't have any of the user interface of Chrome. It's just the website.
Oh.
So yeah, it's like impossible to get the URL out of it. It's crazy, and I was like, what? Why are you using? Why are you using this? Just use an internet browser. That's what they're designed for. it's crazy. It's craziness.
I just want to copy the URL and there's no URL. I'm sorry, it should be there.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm so glad I'm not in IT. Like, just, I couldn't even, yeah. I'm just glad I'm not in IT. So, speaking of people who are not in IT, but have caused the many people to be frustrated for days and years and over their life. This is a torture transition. Douglas C. Engelbart passed away on Wednesday, and he's important because he's the dude that developed the first mouse.
Dang.
Yeah. So the inventor of the mouse is dead. So we won't talk about.
It's appropriate because the mouse is pretty much dead as well.
Yeah, you know, he wanted to go before he saw it completely gone. Yeah, it's, you know, there's a certain amount of irony there. He actually saw pretty much the entire lifespan of his device in his lifespan.
If I remember correctly, he had the first mouse had three buttons, and he actually wanted. Holy cow! My wife is like doing something over there. He actually wanted to have 10 buttons on it, you know, one for like both fingers, all five fingers, and obviously the first mouse that became commercially viable had a single button made by Apple and Jobs. And, you know, with Apple being like, we want simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. And Jobs' logic was, if there's one button, there's no way they will press the wrong button.
Right.
you know, which you sit there and go, man, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was the man who was like, a mouse, I love it.
It's funny. There's a lot of like gaming mouses out there now that do have like tons and tons and tons of buttons. Like you can get like 12 button mice, and everyone I've ever known that's used them says they're awful. Like they sound great until you actually realize that they're really hard to use. And it's like, even my mouse has got, this like super fancy Logitech mouse that I have. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 buttons if you include the roller, and I only ever use the roller and the two side and the two main buttons. The other
four, I would say, is about right.
Yeah, I mean the other four buttons, like my thumb doesn't even know how to use them if I had to. Like I don't know what they do. I don't know why they're there.
So my mouse, which is a magic mouse, hold on 1 second. Yeah, it's fine. My mouse, which is a magic mouse, by the way, technically has zero buttons, but also has a ton of buttons. Because you can do that. It's smart enough to know like a right click versus a left click versus a single finger scroll versus double finger scroll, both backwards and forwards and left and right.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. It's kind of magical.
But this dude, he actually did a lot more than just the mouse. He he did this giant demonstration in the 50s, and let me read this little. In December of 1968, however, he set the computer world on fire with a remarkable demonstration before more than 1,000 of the world's leading computer scientists at the Fall Joint Computer Conference in San Francisco. One of a series of national conferences in the computer field that has been held since the early 1950s. The dude was developing a raft of revolutionary interactive computer technologies and chose the conference as the proper moment to unveil them. For the event, he sat on a stage in front of the mouse, a keyboard, and other controls and projected the computer display onto a 22-foot-high video screen behind him. In little more than an hour, he showed how a networked interactive computer system would allow information to be shared rapidly among collaborating scientists. Basically, he did a big demo on the developing internet. He demonstrated how a mouse, which he had just invented 4 years earlier, could be used to control a computer. And he demonstrated text editing, video conferencing, hypertext, and windowing. So a lot of the modern, kind of a big deal. A couple of the modern interfaces and how that would all work. And all of that technology actually got developed a little bit further by his group before it eventually found its way over to Xerox for further development, and where Xerox developed it as sort of an interesting computer science project, but never really thought of it as anything more than just that, an interesting computer science project, until one Stephen P. Jobs saw it for an hour and then took it, extrapolated it, and turned it into the original or the Macintosh operating system. And what's interesting about it is, like, reading this thing, man, dude, they worship this dude like he was the inventor of it all. Like, this guy was the visionary before the visionaries. Like, honestly, without him, there'd be no such thing as, like, personal computers. Which is an interesting now because it seems a little bit revisionist, because I actually read articles of – I went back and read articles written about him while he was still alive, and they were a little more subdued. But they're like, yeah, he had this cool idea for, like, a pointer on a mouse, but he had no idea what to do with it. Like, it didn't interface with – it wasn't like a click and drag and moving things around and, like – you know, or like the modern, you know, he didn't understand a UI. You're like, he had the idea for the device, but it wasn't coupled with a UI that really made sense with it. And like he had, which, you know, it's one thing to have these ideas. It's a whole nother idea to make a whole nother thing to make a usable system with it.
Right.
And to really have the clarity of vision to understand how all these different pieces fit together, which was the brilliance of the Macintosh team, really. Was their ability to see how all of these things really could fit together in a way that even Xerox had really underestimated. But it was interesting. I mean, but at the same time, he did the early development on a lot of the pieces of technology that were foundational to what Apple later would do and what Microsoft later would do. So it's. The dude was pretty smart. I mean, he had a giant impact on the field.
One of the things that that we talk about within HP is this idea of the actual phrase that we use is the off-ramp and on-ramp of digital to analog content. Oftentimes it's in reference to printing, you know, this idea of taking, you know, a digital document and transforming it to, you know, an analog piece of paper and then vice versa.
Right.
And that's, and at HP, we talk about how we manage that process. And that's what printing is. And when you start thinking about it in terms of that, it frees you up to do some other things, other than calling yourself a printing company, which is cool. And, we know.
Yeah.
And I think the mouse is another example of that. This idea of, oh, I want to go there, or I want to look at that, or I want to touch this. And the mouse is something that enables that, that translates your analog desire to a digital outcome.
Right.
And and that's cool. That's powerful. And, you know, change the world, essentially.
Yeah. No, it is very cool.
The dude's gone. How old was he? He was 80-something, right?
88, man. He's old dude.
88.
Yeah.
He's right around that average age.
Pretty much. That's why they call it average.
Yeah, it's interesting that we are in a time period where it's like that. It's that group right before the personal computers. You know, kind of that foundational group, the computing foundations type guys.
Yeah,
they're all starting to get old and die off.
Yeah,
and Jobs is in a different category. He died early.
Right.
But we're not at that, the Wozniak, Gates, that age yet. They're still young enough. Even though they'll admit that they used to be the youngest and now they're the oldest. And it's interesting to watch these generational changes happen. But here's guys who,
It's a lot of the pioneers of the early silicon.
Is really
what it's funny. I mean, it's all the different levels of computing, really, and the guys that found it. It started with the guys that understood computational logic. They're dying. And those were older. Those were like the 1800s. And then you start moving into the guys that really built the first like IBM electrical machines. And they're dying. And then you're starting to get into the guys that were building the first silicon computer chips or the first transistors. And then the first, integrated circuits. And then the first, And so you go through these waves of all of these different technologies where the pioneers die and go away and never come back, and then new guys have to come up with cool ideas. But that is interesting.
Which the really interesting part for me is, and it's this question really, and I'm sure there's got to be some sort of analogy for this, but it's like, these were the original thinkers, like pioneers, like you said, and they're not around anymore, eventually to pick their brains, to learn from them, to ask questions, to build upon their knowledge because they're gone.
Right.
And, one of the nice parts about the internet is a lot of this stuff becomes, codified and written and stored somewhere.
Somewhat immortalized.
Yeah. But it's kind of like, all right, can't ask him anymore. Can't, with Jobs, it's like, who knows what his vision was for the future? Who knows where he saw this going? We can't ask them anymore. We have to kind of start over in a sense, start with our own opinions and where we see it going. And that's a really interesting place to be. And, and a lot of these pioneers, I like that word, eventually they are going to die. I guess that was the same thing for cars. And what's interesting about that is you get someone like Ford who really pushed the envelope, made a ton of changes, and and in his own way changed the world. And cars have stayed relatively static until the last 5 years. And even then they're like, oh, what if we make it a little different? Instead of just optimizing the current style or whatever. Let's radically try something different and new.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's an interesting place to be at because I feel like you just can't build on top of it forever because you got to start with the foundation and you got to, until you can make huge improvements, you kind of got to understand where you were.
I think one of the reasons why guys like Steve Jobs was really able to define what the touch tablet should be was because he was the one who defined really what the paradigm before that should be, in a lot of ways. And although, obviously there's a tremendous amount of input from a tremendous number of groups of people, it really started as sort of like, in a very big, he was very big and instrumental in the original UI that we were going to sell to people and that people were first going to get to experience. So, when it comes to, the big challenge that Microsoft is dealing with right now with Windows 8, for example, is trying to build something that's quote unquote intuitive, which I really always try to redefine as familiar. Cause I think intuitive is the wrong word to use. And Steve Jobs, I think, was able to build something that was very different, but feels intuitive because it's based on the same paradigm of ideas, although it was very different. And it's easy for him to distill what that paradigm of ideas is because he defined it the first time. You know, he didn't have to figure out what the original creators were thinking about in order to make the next logical extension. It's just that that's where it started. Yeah, and so it will be more difficult the next time, I think, and in the next move, because you need people that really kind of can wrap their head around what was the last one, what makes sense, and what allows it to move forward. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, you know, you've got I was reading about LEDs lately and the development of LEDs and kind of how that's moved forward. And one of the big deals is, we don't think much about the color of LEDs so much, but really the invention of the blue LED was a gigantic thing and very difficult to do. And it's like, you know, you've got these guys that, you know, they basically made a career out of making, you know, developing the first LEDs and how to process it. And then, you know, later, you know, better scientists come along. And there is still some real big ways to move forward in the computer industry, and really smart people working forward, you know, coming up with big ideas. And I have a feeling that this isn't going to, I guess my larger point is, this is not going to feel quite as much like cars, I think, where in 30 years, computers will be, you know, a lot faster and better, but, you know, easily be able to tell that it's the same thing. I have a feeling that in 30 years, it will be very difficult to tell, you know, the similarities. You know, it'll be as hard to tell the difference between I don't know. If you think 30 years back, 1980s, you know, in large part, you know, if you look at the Macintosh operating system versus Windows 8, they're awfully similar, maybe.
Classic view, yeah. And even OS X, you can see it's still got the Apple in the upper left-hand corner. It's still got a trash can.
Yeah.
You know, you're still dragging and dropping icons. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But definitely.
Now, the touch screens and mobile devices, those are genuinely different. I will grant that.
Yeah.
You couldn't look at the screen of an iPhone or Android device and go, oh, yeah, that's just like the first Mac.
Right.
Whereas OS X, you go, yeah, that's like the first Mac. And I could even see, you know, up until Windows 7 and, you know, the desktop part of Windows 8, you go, okay, yeah, I see it. That's the same.
Yeah.
Interesting. Speaking of totally new devices and fundamentally different and world-changing.
Yeah, this sounds exciting.
Yeah. I got some news on Pebble.
Woo! Yeah, tell me about it.
Most important news, they've started manufacturing the white phone, or what are they, not phones, watches.
Yeah.
That's a good mistake to make. That
is a good mistake.
It's like, what is it, really? So I'll be getting mine eventually.
Eventually. Sometime. That's what you've been kind of believing that was the case all along, isn't it?
Yeah, let's see here. I funded it in September. So
wow. Coming up on a year.
Yeah, I know. I'm hopeful though that it'll be within the next 8 weeks, because they started manufacturing it. So it's like, okay, you know, it's. I feel like 8 weeks is enough time for them to make it and send it to me.
That's only because you got the whitewash, though, right? It's not.
I know. Because on other colors, they're doing just fine. For example, with black, they actually started selling it in Best Buy this weekend.
Really?
So you could have gotten one this weekend.
I didn't,
check this out, James. I'm awesome, and you're.
I didn't
stupid.
Know to look for it, or I would have gotten one just to upset you.
Yeah, I'm guessing that if you went to BestBuy.com, you would see it. I don't know, but
let me
there
check
you
this
go.
Out.
So there, and it's the black only, from what I understand. Shipping says coming soon. Store pickup coming soon. But yeah, you could buy it if you wanted to for like $150. And
oh man, $150.
Yeah.
Free shipping, get 5% back in rewards. Oh man, compatible with select Apple and Android products and devices, Bluetooth technology, e-paper display, waterproof design. Man, there's a sweet looking phone.
Yeah, so it was kind of funny. Like, obviously Pebble was like, "This is awesome. We're amazing. It's so great." And because I get an email from them every once in a while, since I'm a backer, of just kind of, you know, essentially telling me what color they're now doing and not white, and then, you know, some other stuff with a lot of pictures. But this time it was like, "And we're doing white. Plus we're in Best Buy," and they were all excited and pumped. And some articles were like, "Pebble makes a last-ditch effort to remain relevant by getting into Best Buy."
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's rough.
Apple's not even out with their iWatch yet. Come on.
Yeah.
Can't declare them dead yet.
Yes.
Okay, come on.
Yeah. Well,
but
you know,
I did find this interesting.
Yeah.
Is that they said that almost every major consumer electronics manufacturer is now actually working on a smartwatch.
Yeah.
Because Dell was the last set, the latest, I guess, to come out and be like, "Oh yeah, we're working on something too."
Dell's still considered a major manufacturer? That's interesting.
Well, I mean, you know.
Yeah. No,
They were like. But Acer was like, "Yeah, we're looking into wearables." Apple, obviously, you know, yes and no. This is what I find super interesting, is that the BlackBerry is actually heir to the technology that, I'm sorry, the Pebble, I've, like, totally ruined the punchline. The Pebble is heir to the technology that went into BlackBerry's smartwatch.
BlackBerry had a smartwatch?
Exactly. And it failed, and they changed it and made some stuff. It was called the Impulse.
They had a are you serious? I had no idea that they had a smartwatch. I had no clue. That's crazy.
Yeah, or at least they – well, so what they're saying is BlackBerry made the decision to outsource production of the first BlackBerry-compatible smartwatch to a company called Alerta, and it was called Impulse. And then after the launch, it was hardly ever heard from again. And then they took what they learned from building the Impulse, and they turned it into the Pebble.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it was originally designed to be compatible and used for with BlackBerry.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And nobody bought it, unsurprisingly.
I know. Which I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Of course, it was from BlackBerry.
I'm going to say, I think the problem is...
that matter. Let's see. Foxconn is working on something. They
came
out with
called an iWatch.
Doing something. No. Their own, like, thing.
I didn't know that Foxconn did any original engineering manufacturing. I thought they only did manufacturing. They were...
They showed a demo. It's an iPhone compatible, so, you know, you got that.
You sure it's not just the iWatch?
A person's respiration and heartbeat, and displays alerts like text messages, Facebook notifications, and ID of callers. Google, they think, is working on something just because.
Google. I thought Google like came out and said they were.
They filed some intriguing watch-related patents, including one that would embed a touchpad in the wristband of a watch, so that a user would not have to touch the watch face in order to interact with the device. Which is cool.
Yeah.
Let's see here. LG. It's rumored that they're working on something. Just because, what is this? But the company is expert at creating a range of smartphones to suit every taste, of course. So like, they could have as many as 30 new devices by the end of 2014.
That seems, I guess. I mean, I guess if all they're doing is developing a little system on a chip with an LCD screen, and then they just put different bodies on it. Wouldn't be hard to come up with 30 different models, you know, if they're all internally relatively the same.
Microsoft is rumored to have requested parts from a supplier in Asia, including a 1.5-inch LCD display, in order to build a prototype. So they're like, should be something going on there. It could just be Microsoft R&D doing their thing.
Yeah, which is probably
you know
it.
Yeah,
seriously, if they were serious about building one, they would have told us 3 months ago. Like, let's be honest, it's Microsoft. They can't keep any secrets.
But they did have Bill Gates showing off one in 2004.
What?
It was a smartwatch with MSN Direct in it.
Mm.
but it never really matured beyond that. Let's see here. Qualcomm. I'm really struggling with pronouncing words today. I'm just going to say it. I'll just admit it. I feel like it, at least. They are a chip maker, and they are also working on something. My guess is their whole thing is that it's going to be like a full-color Marisol display. I don't even know what Marisol is. Oh, it's like the e-ink displays of a Kindle e-reader, and that is reflective, which means it draws much less power than traditional backlit LED like those in smartphones.
Nice.
My guess is they probably won't make the smartphones. They'll just work on the tech that happens just so happens to use their chips, and they'll work with someone else. Let's see. Samsung. They are – everyone's like, yeah, they probably are.
Well, they actually announced they were doing it. They announced they're doing it. That's not a rumor. That's an actual –
They also recently filed a trademark for the term Gear, which suggests that consistent with its smartphone strategy, the company could be preparing an entire smart watch ecosystem, including watches that communicate data to personal digital assistants, a.k.a. smartphones.
Yeah.
And, so, yeah, they have, their president came out and said that they were doing something. Sony already has a smartwatch line, and they are looking to refresh their current one with the creatively named Smartwatch 2. So, the only problem, though, is that it's, like, not compatible with the iPhone.
Yeah, that's the only problem.
Like, if you're not compatible with an iOS device, that's an awfully large part of the market to be. Toshiba, let's see here. They have some smartwatch concepts and has brushed aluminum cases and a leather wristband, also some sensors. And then they finish it up with who isn't building a smartwatch. And those people are HP, HTC, Lenovo, and Nokia. And my guess, I have no insider information that I'm going to share on HP and or the other guys, HT, Lenovo, and Nokia. But my guess is they're probably looking into it, given all the interest everywhere else.
I would not be shocked at
actually
all.
Come out with something.
I would not be shocked at all if HP and HTC are doing it. Lenovo and Nokia, I could see them kind of waiting off a little bit. You know, I mean, the idea that there's nobody working at those companies that have, like, at least putting something together is kind of ridiculous considering the size of all those companies. When I say looking into it, I think more along the lines of, like, seriously trying to put something together. Like, I would put Microsoft into that group. They probably have a couple engineers who it's their day job to see if it makes any sense so that if a competitor pops up with something, you at least have something to start with. But, you know, no real money being put into it. That would be my guess.
So it sounds like, which I think was funny that the analysts declared 2013 the year of the smartwatch, which I'm like, really? 2013? Yeah. Maybe 2014.
Yeah.
We're halfway through the year, and quite frankly, Pebble is, like, mostly shipping all of their stuff.
Yeah.
They're not even on track yet. I mean, all these other ones have listed intentions to do something, but, you know, none of them.
2013 is clearly not the year that brings the watch back.
Yeah.
It's funny. But, I still think it's interesting that
Best Buy, you can get your Pebble.
Oh, man. I want to check them out.
Make me jealous.
I still think it's interesting that the argument against the smartwatch is that, you know, nobody uses watches anymore. But when you think about it in the context of, you know, what is a smartwatch in relation to, you know, why did we have watches in the first place? It's because everybody had pocket watches and it's half function, half fashion. And functionally, it was better to have it on your wrist at all times because it was just strapped there. And then it became a fashion and a status symbol because you could see, you know, your pocket watch was in your pocket, whereas your watch was on your wrist and people could see it quicker. So it's, you know, it was a combination of the two things. And I just shrug my shoulders and I go, I can't for the life of me comprehend why you wouldn't have the same transition with cell phones. It's like the only reason I don't wear a watch is because I have a pocket watch, aka my cell phone. But if it became more functional and a status symbol to have a quote smart watch, well, yeah, I'd get a smart watch instead. I mean, I think anybody who denies that that's the truth. Now, maybe it will just never fall back into fashion, but the idea that it's somehow like not worth it because I have a phone in my pocket, that's what everybody has said about the pocket watch until the wristwatch took over. Like, what the heck? It just seems so short-sighted to me to think that these aren't going to have some sort of a market.
I agree, and there's still a few, like, it's still missing, like, the killer app stuff, I feel like, but I feel like with a few new sensors as well, it becomes very compelling very fast, because not only does it provide you information about that device that's in your pocket very conveniently, like you just talked about, without you having to pull it out, with a few more sensors, it starts to give you even more information, and that becomes super interesting very fast, because now it's doing stuff that your phone can't do.
Right.
But
this is talking about
when you start to put them together. Oh, this is cool.
And see, this is talking about the analog to digital interface, and it's
it makes
it even more interactive. You know, what's interesting here is it's like the mouse is, or the keyboard is a step further from interactive than the mouse. The mouse is a step further from interactive than touch. This is getting to the point where you're beyond touch. And I don't know. I get to the point where I think, I get to the point where I think in this case, it's just, that's where it's going. That's so obviously where it's going. And just that's the trend of all technology for the last century, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And especially, I think especially to me, the big one is if somebody adds a heart pace monitor a heart rate monitor into.
Which they do in a lot of the Nike ones. They have that.
Yeah, Nike doesn't have that.
Trust me. Okay. Maybe the Nike one doesn't. But
there are watches that have GPS
and heart rate.
Say, I know that it exists, but like the main three competitors, Jawbone, Nike, and Fitbit, don't have heart rate monitors, which drives
me crazy.
Okay,
I'm not talking about the Nike Fit or whatever it's called.
Fuel Band?
It's their running one.
Okay. Yeah, see, and I think if you were to put that sort of thing into an,
Huge. Like, I mean, it's like, what is it, iPad or iPod Nano size.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, it's not a small, like you wear it and you go, wow, you run the left side or what's the deal? That thing's huge.
That's funny.
But it does, or I don't even think it does GPS. I think it does like a heart monitor. Yeah, it was something weird, or maybe it did. I don't remember. It didn't. It was missing something fundamental. Where I was like, wow, you paid how much for that, and it doesn't include the GPS or something. I don't know. Whatever. But it had a heart rate. I know that. And she was like, well, that's what I was going for. Pair it with a watch and I get the two together. I'm like, okay, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And I know that, for example, Runkeeper, they say that you can pair it with devices that take your heart rate. And then they'll combine the heart rate data with their GPS and elevation and speed and all that stuff. So,
see, what's really going to frustrate me is when Apple launches the iWatch and it's missing the obvious sensor, then everybody's just like, why? Why would you launch the device without that? Well, that way the early adopters pay a lot for it, and then next year everybody else buys it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's like the Pebble; it doesn't have GPS. I don't think it needs it, but it doesn't have any. It doesn't have a heart rate monitor or stuff like that.
Does it have a pedometer in it?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Do you need a pedometer? Does that even work with on your wrist?
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds dumb.
Nike Fuel Band.
So, also kind of like it's not totally off topic, but it's close enough. If I got when I get my Pebble, yeah. I'm going to use if this, then that to create an alert. Cause I heard of this and I was like, this is brilliant, where it will alert me if and when the International Space Station is coming over me, and say,
nice.
Hey, it's in you. But also connect it with the weather app, so it will only tell me when it's clear and night out.
If this otherwise, and this, then that. Nice.
Like
that is really cool.
Like they were talking about, it was in this cool article talking about the death of RSS and you know, how that's going wayside. And that was just an example of, you know, some sort of mashup you can do with APIs, where it was like you can track the International Space Station, you can track weather, and then have your phone alert you to look up when the conditions are right.
Hey, James, so, I have a question. Why would you do that and not make an app and sell it for $2.99?
I don't know. Because, well, that was an example of back in the days when everyone was free sharing and, you know, awesomeness, and people were making mashups, and you didn't make an app and charge for it.
Yeah, but
made it.
No, but seriously, why? You're not answering my question here. It's actually an interesting. I mean, yeah, that's a cool. I, you know what? I almost don't want to talk about this anymore. On the air.
No, it's fine. Someone can make it. I'll download it. It's cool.
That's true. But like but I mean, just like you know, all your celestial things. Tell me what I can see right now, so I can, you know where I am.
I feel like that definitely exists already.
Yeah, probably. Now
you put your phone up into the air and it tells you what constellations are in your view.
Yeah, but does it alert me?
Just alert me when the Big Dipper's coming through.
Yeah, alert me here. So I don't want to have to look up in order to see it. I just want to be able to see it when I'm looking down. That's the whole point. I'm already looking at my phone. Send me an alert. You should look up right now.
Just tell me. Just tell me to rotate my head up.
Yeah.
There it is.
Whoa.
But that's somehow related to this idea of, you know, if it's on your wrist, all of a sudden it buzzes, you go, oh, cool. Look up,
yeah.
And you know, there it is, and so, you know, weird little things like that. That'll be fun. And I was browsing through watch faces. Was that this morning? I think it was. There's a website where they've aggregated them all together. It's like My Pebble Face or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, there's some cool ones out there. Just goofy. One of them, it acts like Jarvis from Iron Man. Like, oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
And then there's one that's a flux capacitor type thing. One where it's the time is displayed on a couple of blocks, and whenever it changes, Mario jumps up and hits it and changes the time. Like, those are cool. I'm gonna download just dozens of them, just like changing them once a week, messing around with them.
See, that's gonna be the other real bummer of the iWatch is that it's not good. That's gonna be the obvious feature. It's not gonna have one of the obvious features. Why can't other people make watch faces? Why do you? You know, it's so easy to like write applications that even if you just want to make sure that it only does, you know, people can change. It's going to drive me crazy. I can already tell.
So I've already thought about this.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is I will readily admit that the iWatch is better than the Pebble. I'm okay with that if that's the case. I'm not going to try to be like, oh no, mine's so much better. Other than I will point out, oh, there's a couple things I can do that you can't.
Yeah.
And then just be like, and I was an early adopter thing. Mine was significantly less, which I know will be true.
Yeah.
And, you know, just be like, so there you go. But, yeah, it'd be cool. But
when it happens.
I think there are a lot of manufacturers, and there will very quickly be a lot of choices. And Pebble is one of them, which you can pick up at Best Buy and make me totally jealous. Except yours will be black, and mine will someday maybe be white. What will really kill me is when I'm on vacation, which I'm headed on next week for like a week and a half. So my next couple podcasts, by the way, will be in weird locations, which we'll have to figure out somehow now that I'm thinking about it. And because I'm not bringing my iMac with me.
Mm.
And at least I don't think I am. That'd be a little over the top. And so anyways, I'd be really bummed if it came. I was like, no, it's there and I'm here and I can't get it.
Don't get your hopes up.
No. Yeah. Well, they're manufacturing it. That's
true.
It's being made.
It takes a little while for it to get there, though.
I know. I'm ready for it. I was ready for it like 3 months ago.
I feel you.
Okay, well, like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Close, almost 12.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Watching those manufacturing things happen on Kickstarter. That's rough, man. I've got like 4 projects that are like slowly working their way through. I'm just like, oh, come on. I want to play with this thing. Can't you just give it to me? Gosh, guys. What the heck?
It's kind of weird because with Kickstarter, it's like it's pre-announcing a product.
Right.
And then they're like obliged to tell you all about it to keep you interested. And you suddenly realize, no, it's really that slow for all the big companies. They just make it a point not to tell you ahead of time. And this is nothing but – this is the very definition of vaporware.
Right. Yeah.
And just the frustrating nature of how long these things take, especially ones where they suddenly go, oh, this is popular.
Hmm. Yeah. And sometimes Kickstarter projects do it like in the time frame that they set. And I'm always really impressed by that. But because you're like, so it's funny. My expectation whenever I sign up for it, I just add a couple months to the expected ship date. You know, I'm sure they're giving you the optimistic time frame. Because they don't,
Of course. That's what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
We should do a Kickstarter project just for the sake of being awesome.
It's true. I don't know what it would be, but it'd be great.
We'll make an app that tells you when the International Space Station's coming over your head.
Charge $3.
The weather's nice out.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
If you pledge $5, we'll give you the app.
Exactly. So
speaking of cool apps.
Okay.
I don't know. That was a bad transition, but we'll go with it.
Okay.
Speaking of cool apps that in some ways are really just like one-off side projects, Yahoo has been buying a ton of these types of things.
Yeah.
And their latest one, no, it's not their latest one anymore. One of them recently is Big Noggins, which I'm pretty sure I mispronounced that right now.
It's funny. I thought it was like Big No Gins, but Big Noggins is probably.
I don't know.
Right.
It's a fantasy sports app, essentially. And it's a one-man app. So this one dude has been coding this thing up. His name is Jerry Shen. He's a software engineer, and he worked in the defense industry and then made an iPhone app as a side project, which very quickly became his main project.
Yeah.
Kind of like, that's cool. He and his wife set off on a round-the-world trip in 2011, and he did all of the development for Big Noggins while traveling. And the app eventually became the number one paid sports app on iTunes. Whoa. With over a million downloads. So I can do quick math. Cool. And so what he said is that after many years as a free agent, I'd like to officially announce that Yahoo has picked me up off the waivers. He said, I'm excited to join a team of all-stars to take fantasy sports to the next level. I've been playing Yahoo Fantasy since high school and have wanted to work here since college, so this really is a dream come true for me. So have you ever used Yahoo's fantasy sports
platform? No, I actually haven't.
It's
terrible.
How do I want to describe it? It's an example of a platform. This is really hard to describe.
I can tell.
It looks like it was built in 1995.
Yeah.
But with the functionality of something from 2005. Okay. So it does a lot. Like, it's got the Ajax. It's got some of the, advanced query tools and whatnot. But it just looks old. And you're kind of like, really, guys, this is not modern at all. And it's just very heavy graphics, very, and not a web 2.0. It's like, you know, web 1.0 plus the GIFs type thing. But there aren't any GIFs, but it feels like if there were, you'd be like, yeah, that feels about right.
That's awful.
Yeah, it is awful. And it was, and it always loaded slow. And there were multiple times when I would do something and I would click like save and I go, oh shoot, I have to do this again. And I'd have to refresh the page and then do whatever changes that I did and then save it again. Which I will admit that doing fantasy sports sounds complicated just because you got all these teams and everyone has their own little team and you have all this, there's just super, super heavy data intensive and, you know, there's a lot going on. They're like a bunch of mini social networks, really.
Right.
With constantly updating information and whatever. It's just a product that it just feels like there's been no resources put towards design, and they've got a team that's just running as fast as they can to just keep it up.
Right, right.
To make sure that it has the latest information for the new season. So anyways, this dude, apparently, has a mobile fantasy sports app, which is awesome, and he has now been bought by Yahoo, which is one of the many. So this past week alone, this is one of three. Quickie is the other one. Big Noggin and then Exomb. Oh, man, I always say this one right. Wrong. Exomni. It's inbox backwards. And which is, not surprisingly, an inbox management service. I don't remember what Quickie is. I feel like I used to know what that was. They won some awards. They're cool. But so all that to say, this was like one of three purchases where this one article I said he was read. He was like, "Well, I was going to talk about Yahoo's latest acquisition, but I was a day late, and in that amount of time, it is no longer the latest."
Oh wow, jeez.
Yeah, so they've done a ridiculous number of things. It's like they have done, what is it? Since Marissa Meyer took over, they have done 17 acquisitions.
Whoa.
17. And then Quickie was the second biggest at $50 million. The first biggest being Tumblr.
Right.
And for like $1 billion. But they've been doing all these small little snap up. They're calling like their combination like acquihires, plus they've already got a mobile app thing going on. And so now, I mean, it's just, it's such a like a feverish pace that everyone's going like, all right, Yahoo, what's your deal? What's your play? Yeah. What are you going for? Clearly you're sticking in the headlines because we love to talk about acquisitions and the amount of money you're throwing around. Oh, and this is the other thing. They were saying that the reason why Yahoo is able to do this is because they are part owners of, what is it? It's Alibaba. Is that how they pronounce them? I probably just killed their name. They are a search company in China or Japan, in Asia. Keep it general. I'm right. And that company is just taking off like gangbusters, and they own like 15% or something, you know, a small portion of it. And so they can do all these stock offers. And like, yeah, she could probably do another 17 if she wanted or more.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah. So they're just like, so she's got the money. Who cares? But now they're trying to say, like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Yahoo's strategy here?
I think the obvious answer is what we talked about. And gosh, it's probably 4 weeks. It was probably 4 weeks ago now, where they're building a platform. They're trying. They've realized that the real money is in aggregating and understanding what people like and what they're doing. And they've already got a giant platform with a bunch of different things, but they're adding more and more. They're trying to update services. They're trying to update different pieces of the puzzle. It's like Big Noggins, I think, is clearly designed to update and keep pace with, you know, with the NFL and the NBA and all the different, you know, all the different sports franchises that are actually building their own, you know, competitive fantasy mm-hmm. sports league. I think Yahoo's trying to keep up with that, and so they're gonna try to build a better system. And why not acquihire somebody to do it? And whereas things like Tumblr, I think, is entirely based around the idea of trying to get as much information about the users. And so it's all about updating the services that they do have while incorporating more services, trying to get every person on the internet to be using Yahoo at some point. You know, I think that's the goal, is they just want everybody who uses the internet to be using a Yahoo service, similar to what Google does and what, you know, and what Microsoft is trying to do and what Facebook is trying to do. You know, Facebook is trying to get everybody to use Facebook. Google is trying to have a service for everybody. And Yahoo, I think, is trying to do, you know, unsurprisingly, Mayer's doing what she did at Google, which is try to build services that touch, that everybody uses at least one of. And then you can start to build graphs and information about users, and it gives you more power to do more stuff. And that's the most valuable companies in the world, you know, online right now, are companies that basically everybody uses, touches them in some way, and or touched by them, and the data collection that goes with that, the big data mining, you know. And it just, to me, that seems like the strategy. And she's trying to do it in an incredibly accelerated pace, and because she can, you know. And I think the real question is, you know, you've got plates spinning. She had a bunch of plates spinning, slowing down, some of them toppling, and now all of a sudden she's coming in with a bunch of energy and hoping that she, you know, and by buying a bunch of extra plates and a couple of plate spinners, she's hoping to get, you know, to and balance the load across all of that and get that all moving and up to speed. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if it's, it, I think the real interesting part is going to be to see how many of these survive in any capacity, really, you know, and how many.
Well, see, that's the crazy part, is on almost every single one of them, they're like, don't worry, we're maintaining the brand and the app. It's going to stay there.
Yeah. Well, that's not what I mean. I mean, you know, how many of these apps are just going to go the way of GeoCities, where, you know, where, yeah, Yahoo left the term GeoCities, but eventually the platform died because everybody stopped using them. It's like, you know, I Big Noggin sounds like a good one that people are going to keep using, but, you know, there's still a big question over Tumblr. How long is Tumblr going to be popular for? How long is, you know, how long are these different services going to be, you know, they're making all these investments and buying these apps. And, you know, unfortunately, apps rise to popularity and just die in a matter of minutes sometimes if something better comes along. And so that, to me, will be the most interesting part about this. That's furthermore, that's what goes back to my idea that they're trying to build a company that everybody touches Yahoo somewhere and doesn't know it. It's sort of like, you know, we talk about this all the time, but, you know, Levi couldn't sell Docker, couldn't sell, you know, nice dress pants. They couldn't sell khaki pants. So they started Dockers. And I think that's why they're keeping all the brands, because they don't care if you're using Yahoo or not. What they care is if they're getting your data. That's the only consistent thing through all of it, is that you're using their servers to do these different activities. And why would they want you to do that unless they just want your personal information so that they can aggregate and sell you ads? I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess One of the thoughts that I instantly had about all that was, like, can you actually manage all of that transition and change? You know, that's a lot going on. But then I thought, again, I'll lean on this because that's my personal experience. You know, at HP Discover, I saw a ton of different products and services that HP is working on. And you were like, I was like, whoa, you know, there's a lot going on here. People are actually working really hard yeah. on this stuff. It's not like we just do printers and, you know, we do a ton of other stuff. And even within the printers, there's like 100 different projects going right. on. And somehow it all coordinates magically. And I wonder if she's like, don't worry, we got the resources. They're all sitting around. They're not doing things that I think are important right now, or a priority, I should say. And she's like, and we can all work together and incorporate this stuff. Because one of the things they were saying is she's probably got like 2 years to make something of this, and then founders will be contractually no longer obliged to hang around.
Right.
And it would be kind of like, all right, either we made something of value or, yeah, that didn't work. And it could just be a buy it all and see what sticks. We got the money. And hopefully we'll get lucky half of them. You know, and they'll actually integrate. Half of them maybe won't. You know, who knows? But, yeah, it's just interesting. I don't know where they're headed with all of this. But one of the other arguments that I heard was like, okay, fine. You bought Xomni. It's an inbox management tool. Do you really believe that people are going to be leaving Gmail and Flox to come to Yahoo Mail?
I don't really. The thing is, I don't think they need to. I think I come back to, I don't think that's the goal. I don't think it just doesn't seem like they're going out and buying. I think Xomni is going to be another one of those updates where they're going to take an inbox management. You're going to see the technology that they've incorporated into that app migrate its way over to Yahoo Mail. And you'll slowly see Yahoo Mail and, I'll bet you see that become an app like Gmail has an app. And it'll look, uncomfortably like Xomni, and because the dude who built Xomni is going to be building this other app or the team that built it, that's what my guess would be. That to me, that's more about keeping Yahoo. I would guess that's about keeping Yahoo relevant. And unlike Tumblr, which is about keeping, about expanding, your market. And
I can see, we'll run with the email one, just because I think it's interesting, where they turn that, it is email, but they really turn it into like a message center. And, it's like, oh, you got an update on Tumblr? Oh, it's sitting in your Yahoo Mail messages right now.
Right.
Oh, you got a fantasy update? Oh, guess where that's at right now. And P.S., you can email external people. That's totally fine. But, and I guess that's where I'm kind of hoping is that they figure out a way where, let's say that you're using this big noggin and you're, whatever, doing your thing, and they start to integrate other Yahoo features into it to where it's just this natural extension and it fully makes sense. And before you know it, you're using some other Yahoo property like email, which they've improved with Xomni and other businesses that they've bought or apps, I guess. And you're like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. Yeah. I'll use this and to communicate back and forth. And I'll read my news on this and I'll share it on using this other service that happens, and I'm read news on Sumly, which looked interesting, and now it's integrated with Tumblr to just quickly, share it out there for the world to see and have my own personal Tumblr, if you will. And, hey, cool, it's here. And now I'm following people on Tumblr, and that news shows up on my Yahoo homepage for when I visit. In addition to the weather and horoscopes, I can see news from people I've liked a lot. And I guess part of what you're hearing is I have this hope and this desire that it is some crazy strategy where they're like, yeah, we're going to integrate all of this and it's going to be awesome. And, they've got all these hopes and dreams and all these hooks and it'll just be very, very cool. But I also have this feeling that that's just me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I completely agree. I think that would be awesome. I don't think there's any chance that it's going to happen. I think, or not any chance, or I think that's a long-term strategy. I'll bet that's,
Kickstarter, I want it yesterday, and it's actually like 4 years out.
Right, exactly. So, sorry, Charlie.
But, well, I hope I'm half right, and I'm right on the good stuff.
I understand. So, what was I going to say? I was going to come up with some clever transition, but I don't have one. I'm just going to jump into it. So I'm Apple, obviously has been a big, company. Wow. This has been a great
they
start
have
to
been
this
a big
story.
Company. Yes.
They obviously had a lot of their manufacturing done by Samsung until Samsung started taking all of those plants and building their own phones based on them. And they
That happens.
Hey man, it's Asia. And Apple has had this problem of Samsung's been one of the biggest manufacturing companies in the world, and really is one of the few companies that's been able to keep pace with the level of Apple product manufacturing that's been going on, in conjunction with companies like Pegatron and Foxconn. But Samsung has been doing a lot of the chip manufacturing for Apple for the past couple of years, specifically for the iPhone. All your A6 and A5s and everything. And at the same time, it's like everybody's been going, your direct competitor in the phone market is Samsung. And yet they're a fundamental part of the supply chain for the iPhone.
Wasn't a big deal until like a year or two ago. One of many.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though they were a direct competitor, they weren't leading. And then furthermore, really and truly, although the money all funnels up to the same CEOs, the hardware chip division is a completely different division than the consumer product division. I mean, there's basically no shared management. So there wasn't a big conflict of interest, and it actually wasn't until Apple started suing them that it sort of became okay, we can't be friends anymore. Like this is, that's when the divorce got ugly and it became a problem. So the big, they were buying a ton of stuff from Samsung that was going into the iPhone, like screens and things of that nature. And they've been slowly moving all of those different components to other manufacturers like Sharp and LG and stuff. But they finally made the big jump, the tough one, the one that people weren't really sure if they were going to be able to move away from, which is the heart of the whole iPhone, the system on a chip, the A6 or A7 or whatever the next couple are going to be called. They've now signed a contract with the TSMC, which is the Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing Corp. TSMC is a huge fab company. They work with Qualcomm. They work with NVIDIA. And are the two big ones that design chips, and then TMC does all the actual manufacturing on the fabrication of the wafers and the chips and everything. Which is kind of interesting, and worthy of note that big transition is happening, but there's a lot of concern that goes with it because although TSMC is one of the biggest semiconductor manufacturers in the world, they don't have the greatest track record of delivery dates. they've been
interesting.
NVIDIA, obviously, like I said, NVIDIA has been working with them for quite a few years, and at some point it just became like this running joke, where NVIDIA would basically have their earnings call, and the CEO of their earnings call or CEO would like get on and say, yeah, so these are all the different things we're doing, and we're not really able to ship as many chips as we want because TSMC isn't hitting the numbers and deadlines like they're supposed to. And it was just quarter after quarter, they would come up and TSMC isn't hitting hitting the marks that they're supposed to. And it actually got to the point where, NVIDIA publicly slammed them at the International Trade Partners Conference, which was like a huge deal because it's like everybody's there and they basically were like, these guys are awful to work with. The problem is that they've got these giant contracts written with them, and everybody's building so many chips that it's actually remarkably hard to find companies that can do scale like you want them to. So NVIDIA hates TSMC right now. They're like totally don't get along, and NVIDIA still gets all of their manufacturing done there. And Qualcomm doesn't have quite the same outwardly negative view of TSMC, but they are constantly reporting that they're having constraints and not getting enough chips built. So it's just been this, so it's been this big, like, big, you know, problem that they're that this company, despite its size, just has a hard time of hitting its numbers.
And NVIDIA isn't just some small no-name company who has no power.
Yeah, no, they're gigantic. You know, especially in the mobile telecoms world, I think what you'll see, actually, you'll probably see, is NVIDIA move over to Samsung to get manufacturing done of their other chips. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Apple is planning to do what they did with LG and Sharp, which is essentially save the company so that they can continue to manufacture screens. Because like LG, not LG, was it Philips that was on there that was like crashing? Well, there was a LCD panel company. I think it's Philips. That was they were basically about to go under, and all of a sudden they got this huge cash injection from unknown investors to allow them to survive. And then like a day later, Apple was like, "Oh, it's cool that you're going to survive. Want to make our screens for us?" You know, and signed a giant contract with Apple. And I have a feeling that what you're going to see is you're going to see Apple do to TSMC what they did to Foxconn, which is they're going to become their biggest company customer overnight, and you're going to see Qualcomm and NVIDIA get pushed even further onto the back burners of importance. I'll bet you'll see expansions of TSMC as they suddenly have all this money to build new fabs, and with any kind of luck, they'll need somebody to make six inch horizontal furnaces for processing wafers. Fingers crossed, as that affects me directly. I think this is an interesting move. A lot of people are very cautious about letting Apple or having Apple do that, because it's like, you know, as much as a headache it was to have you be all wound up with Samsung, not being able to hit deadlines because you're manufacturing companies. They talk about the fact that they buy like half of the world's supply of aluminum ahead of time, so they have enough aluminum for their computers just because they can and they want to have enough. And so I find it hard to believe that, especially a dude like Tim Cook, where this is his expertise, his supply chain management, would get into bed with a company without having a plan to be able to keep up product. And the other thing is that they have like 2 years before they have to really worry about it, because they have two more years on their contract with Samsung. So the next two generations of iPhones are going to be still built, you know, primarily chips are going to be coming out of the Samsung factory. So it'll be interesting to watch this over time, I think. The other big thing about this is that, you know, there was still a lot of chatter about Apple moving over to Intel to have Intel do fabrications. And Intel's big hang up was they wanted Apple to use some sort of core Intel technology in order to use their foundries. I think that ended up being a sticking point for the two companies, because it sounds like Intel doesn't get the Apple manufacturing business, which is, you know, whatever it is, what it is, man.
I understand Intel's position on that. Hey, you can use us, but you got to use some of this other stuff, because that's where their margins probably are.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, foundries
are
make sense for them.
Yeah, foundries are a tough game, and you know, the reality there. I mean, there's not money in it like there used to be. And yet there's oodle, especially for Intel, because I know how much money they spend on their systems, and they spend a lot more than anybody else in the world. And, they make gigantic capital investments that take years and years and years to, you know, get systems built. So they don't make their money because of their foundry. And they'd be really expensive chips, actually, if that was all they were doing. But it's because they can sell the final product, and it uses all their core technology at incredibly inflated prices, that allows them to afford the extravagant fabs that they have. And, it's funny just learning more and more about Intel and how they go about manufacturing their machines. It becomes obvious why they just can't afford to not have their transistor designs in part of the wafers that they're manufacturing. Just not, like you said, not enough money in it.
Total side thought here, but my wife recently took on a new job.
Yeah.
And it requires her to use her computer a lot more, you know, for like actual work stuff, not just pleasure, entertainment. And no, it's kind of awesome because she had the last generation MacBook before they just stopped making them. And it was like, you know, the $999 version of it. So, you know, not a whole lot of upgrades, just the basic. And it was struggling to just run like Word.
Right.
iPhoto. And the way that she described it is that she could run two programs at once and it would be, she could tolerate it. Yeah. The second she opened up the third one, it was done. An act of frustration. And so I was like, okay, ding, 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 that equals RAM.
Right.
And so I started doing research and, you know, unlike chips, RAM is just one of those, there is no brand associated with it. It just kind of, you buy one and cross your fingers.
Right.
Kind of. And you never really know what's on it and who it is coming from. And, you know, that's one of Intel's deal, right? It's like Intel inside. It's branded as Intel. You know it's Intel. You know what you're getting. So all that to say, she had 2 gigs of memory in it. And according to Apple, you could go up to 4 gigs of memory. Well, I found one that went up to like 16. And I know. I didn't get the 16. I got the 8.
Nice.
It solved the problem.
Yeah, that'll do it, man.
It still opens apps slow, which I was like, which I knew, right? I was like, that is going to take as long as it takes.
Yeah, it's because it's a hard drive. You need a hard drive upgrade.
Yeah, she's got the hard drive and just the chip that's running it all is still whatever speed that is.
Yeah.
And so it takes a while for apps to open up. But while that one's opening, she can jump around and do other stuff, and it can handle it all flawlessly now. So it nice. Transformed her job overnight, which was cool.
It is. It is interesting.
Just one more and then I'll let you go. When we bought these computers, one of the things I remember saying this and we finally did it, I said, well, we'll buy the low end on that particular thing. And I went, and they'll work fine. And then I said, and then what'll happen in 2 to 3 years when they're getting slow and sluggish, we'll give them what I would call a midlife kicker where we'll upgrade, say, the RAM or, you know, whatever makes sense. And all of a sudden it'll speed up again and enough where we can survive for another 2-3 years before, okay, now it's time to redo the entire thing.
Yeah.
And which is exactly what happened with hers. Mine is still fine. It hasn't hit that point yet where I'm like, okay. But I think I'm rocking like 4 gigs of RAM in mine, which is still enough to do everything I want. But anyways.
No, it's sort of an interesting, relatable that, you know, it's Intel is one of the unique pieces in silicon manufacturers out there that you really know where it's made and what technology is in it. Whereas, you know, with your RAM,
which was their whole thing, right? Is they came out and said everyone else was just some non-specific OEM part. No. We want to brand ours. We want people to know that it's us, which then led to AMD doing the same thing. Cause people are like, well, what's inside? And they're like, oh, well, it's AMD.
Right.
Or, you know, It's a something else, a Qualcomm chip. And, you know, and so they were the ones who, like, because they were like, if we can get a brand, we can charge a premium because people will trust us and they'll know that it's awesome. And because we're going to make a superior product was kind of their deal. Makes sense. Yeah, because mine, it was like, once I figured out the type that I wanted, I was searching on, like, Amazon and Newegg, and where did I eventually buy it from? It was, like, OWC or something. But there were, like, four or five places. And honestly, I was like, I actually don't know if this is good or not good. And I'm not even 100% sure if this is the right one.
Right, yeah.
Which I ended up going with this one because it was the only one that matched Apple's, like, recommended stats perfectly.
Mm.
And I went, okay. Other than the fact that Apple said it can go up to 4, and they obviously had bigger.
Right.
They were like, no worries, totally tested. Okay. But it had, like, all the other, like, stats, you know, the number of pins and speeds and blah, blahs.
Yeah,
you know,
number of pins is a big one. You want to make sure you match that.
Which I thought was interesting because Apple had, like, it was a 22-pin deal, and all the other ones, except for this one, were all 20 pins.
Huh.
I feel like those last two are important.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe they count differently. I don't know.
They count differently. They start at number. They start at 3.
Dude, who knows? It was weird. And so I ended up, like I said, they were all 200, and this one was like a 204.
Mm.
Some random number. But anyways, it was like this major, like, I guess I buy it and cross my fingers that it doesn't break
right.
The computer or something. I don't know. You know, and so that's what Intel banks upon is I go, oh, it's Intel. I know it'll work. It'll be fine. It's designed for this. Cool. And I pay a premium for that peace of mind.
Right. Right, right. Yeah. So it'll be, it's interesting now that, yeah, Apple's doing the same thing with branding their silicon.
Oh. Yeah. But. Which obviously their whole thing, I mean, they've got pretty strict quality standards on what's good and what's not. And, you know, if it's not good, they're like, no, it doesn't count. Sorry. And I feel like they'll be pretty heavily involved with TSMC to make sure that it hits the quality standards that they're looking for.
Right.
Where are they located? Do you know that?
Taiwan.
Oh, all right.
The Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation, so.
I don't know that. All right.
Yeah, Taiwan. So, speaking of transistors, if you don't mind me jumping on this story real quick. We talk about this every once in a while, and I refer to this idea of your phases of technology, and everybody in the industry that I give these, you know, what the next four steps are, they all completely agree with me.
I disagree.
Okay, that's perfect. We're on silicon. We're on 2D silicon right now. Everything's manufactured in layers, but really and truly, there's like one layer of everything. We're going to move to your 3D, which is the idea that, you know, really and truly, you'll lay things out and they'll be able to go up, and it'll allow you to stack transistors way closer together, build blocks of silicon, should be a lot faster. But that's the next stage of fabrication development. The phase the phase after that is going to be another material, like as your doping. So
like
instead of silicon, silicon will go with germanium or carbon or whatever, and they'll make them out of diamonds or graphene, something to that effect. And that's going to have a couple year shelf life, but you'll be able to make these really, really, you'll be able to pull really a vast amount of current through the wafer because it's going to be made out of material that can survive higher temperatures. The problem with that is that they'll be high energy consumers. So you won't necessarily see that take place, you know, in mobile devices because they'll still be very high energy. Well, they'll be incredibly high energy consumption, but you'll see those start to, you know, take place in your bigger computers that are actually plugged into the walls and stuff. After that, though, the next big one, and depending on how this technology goes, you might see it sooner than later. I've always said it's going to be optical transistors, and transistors that are turned on and off by
light.
Yeah, and so and yeah, so the reason why that's a big deal is because it you know, instead of using electricity, which has a huge amount of resistance and requires a lot of power to pull through the transistor, light goes A, at the speed of light, and B, it has barely any resistance. So the power consumption is way lower. And the reality of it is that pulling electricity through a chip travels at about half the speed of light. So just from that perspective alone, these things are going to be way faster because you'll be able to
it'll be twice as fast.
Yeah, basically.
It's cool.
Yeah, and so what's that's not necessarily true. That's an unfair comparison because the propagation of the electrical force is nearly the speed of light. It actually no, that's not true. I was just reading about this weekend. I was on the plane, so I was really tired. But it's the electron moves really slow. Ideal propagation is like in a vacuum under, you know, good temperatures, you can get it to move at like 90% of the speed of light. But the real propagation of electricity under normal circumstances is about half the speed. And so, yeah, so this would be a pretty big breakthrough if it could ever happen. Well, good news. The rest of America was taken off the 4th of July, but MIT wasn't.
Good job, MIT.
Yeah, it was the only news that popped up on Thursday. MIT news. Researchers build an all-optical
transistor. Take a vacation, jeez.
I know, seriously. You guys are so smart, but you don't know how to relax.
They're not street smart.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a big deal. This is the first time that this has really been demonstrated in a real, like, practical way where there's no transition, because usually like optical transistors, the idea that everybody's like talked about has been like, you know, you build a thing that creates a current and the current creates another pulse of light, and that's the best that we've come up with for optical transistors at this point. But these dudes, they came up with a better way of doing it, or an actual way of doing it. And so let's see, the heart of the switch. So essentially the transistor works as a switch controlled by whatever it's controlling is controlled by the same sort of thing, which means that you can stack them together. So the heart of the switch is a pair of highly reflective mirrors. When the switch is on, an optical signal, a beam of light, can pass through both mirrors. When the switch is off, only about 20% of the light in the signal can get through, which is effectively an off. The paired mirrors constitute what's known as an optical resonator. If you had just one mirror, all light would come back. The Lester Wolf professor of physics at MIT, who led the new work, when you have two mirrors, something very strange happens. Light can be thought of as a particle, photons, but it can also be thought of as a wave, an electromagnetic field. And even though on the particle description, photons are stopped by the first mirror, on the wave description, the electromagnetic field laps into the space between the mirrors. If the distance between the mirrors is precisely calibrated to the wavelength of the light, basically a very large field builds up inside the cavity that cancels the field coming back and goes in the forward direction. In other words, the mirrors become transparent to light at the right wavelength, which is weird. And then if you fill the mirror with a gas of supercooled cesium atoms, ordinarily these atoms don't interfere with the light passing through them, but if a single gate photon is fired in the midst of at a different angle, kicking just one electron of one atom into a higher energy state, it changes the physics of the cavity enough that light can no longer pass through it. So essentially they put, it actually almost makes sense to me in a physics ways. But basically what they do is they build this resonator thing that will allow light to pass through it in the weird way that physics, you know, that light can do that sometimes. And by having it all be the right wavelength and everything. And then they put something in there that can block it if one photon hits it. And it's just like, yeah, that's kind of – it's pretty similar to how a transistor works. And so what's exciting
– that's the word.
Yeah, so it's exactly – so, you know, obviously this is one of those things where, like, this is not perfect in – you're not going to start building transistors right away. This is, like, the early single-point germanium transistors that were, like, huge, like really big, and it's basically a proof of concept. But what he says is really cool about this is that now that they've actually done it, now that they figured out how to do it to some level, now there's no, you know, especially the super cold part, that's difficult. But what they were saying is that there's no real physics that says you can't build a actual structure, a crystalline structure that can't do the same thing once you understand how to do it. And so what they were saying was basically
matter scale.
Yeah, what they're basically saying is if you can build the crystal, you can take a sheet of silicon, which is really exciting because we already know how to process silicon really well. So
we do.
Anytime we can leverage that, manufacturing base, the better. They said basically you just dope it with different chemicals, and if you can seed it with the right crystal, you could build crystals that would replace the super cooled cesium atoms, and that where if you, you know, where they'll be invisible to light passing through it unless you hit it with a single photon, at which point the particles jumping through different energy states will start to mess stuff up, and bada bing bada boom, quantum effects, and light can't pass through anymore. And then all of a sudden what you can do is you can build a couple of really cool things. Number one, you can build an all-light processor, which would be huge because they'd be way lower energy capacity. And because they work on traditional transistor logic, converting, you know, a computer, a traditional computer, or a program that runs on a traditional computer to a traditional piece of silicon to a program that would run on this would be pretty easy because it'd be the same logic. It's like it would just run the same way. You know, building the interface to build them into traditional components would be more difficult. But there's no real engineering or physics problem with the idea of, you know, saying, no, we're just going to build computers that use light instead of, you know, to do all the processing. But the other really exciting part about this, and probably where it will get incorporated first, is in all of our fiber optic routers. Because right now what we do is we fire off of, you know, a photon through a fiber optic cable. It travels at the speed of light, nearly the speed of light, to get to the next router. And at the next router, we turn it into electricity, we process it, and then we shoot it off onto the next leg of the router. And so the bottleneck for the router universe is
the translation,
the actual routers, and turning it into electrical signals. That's where we get the major slowdown in computation. So, everybody, the goal on this will probably first be to build gates or routers that use light so that you can send signals from one side of the world to the other without it ever having to translate back to electricity.
That's cool.
Yeah, which is pretty dang exciting. And the nice part about that is size won't be as important because that's going to be microfine.
Right.
These are going to be difficult at first. Whereas if you build bigger routers, but they're super fast, that's pretty awesome. It'll work just fine. And they use like low energy consumption. And then you'll start to see this moving into the realm of trying to put it into computers and stuff. And once you have optical transistors, then the idea of being able to build quantum computers becomes that much easier. It's long been known. We've built, single bit, quantum bit, quantum computers. And then, that one company, they're, I can't remember what they're called. They're building, Google just bought one of their quantum computers. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like faux quantum computers. They work like quantum computers and they work pretty well, but it's long been known that if you really want to build a quantum computer, you're going to need light transistors. It's just, they go hand in hand. And so the idea of, and this is that fourth stage of processing, which will really move us into quantum computing. None of this is going to kill silicon completely. Silicon will always have a place in our world. These will actually be smaller and smaller parts of the computer industry, really and truly, because they're more, although they're way more powerful, they're more and more niche. Whereas silicon's so abundant and so cheap to manufacture that, your universe of things where everything has a computer chip in it and probably a system on a chip, that will almost definitely be made out of silicon, because those will be really low power consumption and stuff, and they'll be crazy cheap to make. Whereas your main computer hubs, like the computer you have in your on your desktop, that'll have a light processor on it, because it'll be more expensive. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's really exciting, though. They actually did it. It's just, yeah. So
that is cool.
You know, physics never said we couldn't, but it, actually doing it is a whole different, level of exciting. So,
right.
Yay. I'm excited.
Very cool.
Yeah. Hmm.
I like it.
Yeah, me too.
Speaking of a whole nother level of exciting.
I like it.
Let's talk about Zynga and how,
all right.
How exciting of a week they had.
Yeah.
So their stock was up like 20% this last week.
Nice. Did they come out with a new Farmville?
Nope.
Oh, what did
Instead,
they do?
Instead, they came out with a new CEO.
Oh, man.
Don
Matrick. What sucker did they get to do that?
Taking over for Mark Pincus.
Okay. That's exciting. Kind of. Who is he?
He is the former Xbox boss.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he, he got denied the ability to have always online, to have the requirement of you must always be online, and the ability to thwart the resale market.
Yeah.
With Xbox. So he has switched to a company that requires you to be online all the time and has no products that they sell. You can't sell used games. So solve that problem.
Yeah, that's funny.
So I don't know if you've been paying attention to Zynga's stock much.
Hey man, they're one of the hometown companies. So yes, I have friends that are directly affected by the disaster that is Zynga right now.
Yes. Okay. It's been kind of a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
And so Don is coming on board to try to right the ship, if you will.
That's good.
And like I said, the stock jumped up like 20%. People were like, woohoo, yeah, it's going to be awesome. But then O.M. Malik, the founder of GigaOM, came out with a fairly scathing piece for why this will not go well, and which kind of lined up pretty well with BuzzFeed's thing as well, which they were like, again, they're like, it's going to go well. They said, how do I want to say it? So they're like, yeah, everyone was like, this is going to be great. It's going to be awesome. It goes, except for the fact that this doesn't help them with their number one challenge at all, which is going mobile.
Yeah.
Like, and Matrick knows nothing about mobile.
Right.
And, And it was like, and furthermore, he's a creative person. It's like, and Zynga isn't really a creative company.
Right.
That's not how they work. It goes, and we'll take it one step further. Pincus is becoming the chief product officer. Okay? So he's in charge of the actual games that they're making. He's like, the division that actually makes the games and the content. So from that perspective, what has changed for Zynga?
Yeah.
And then BuzzFeed wrote this. They were like, well, that sounds good in theory of him coming on board. They're like, in practice, Pincus has a reputation for being a micromanager, unable to delegate responsibilities or empower his lieutenants. And then they said one of these sources said the fact that Pincus will hold the chief product officer title could seriously water down Metric's powers. So
yeah.
You're like, so yeah, he's like, so you go into the DNA, right? Where their whole thing is we are here to monetize games. He even on one of them, he goes, Pincus said, I don't care about innovation. He goes, you're not smarter than your competitor. Just copy what they do and do it until you get their numbers.
Wow.
If anything, he says, we're an analytics company masquerading as a games company. And they're like you don't go from that to, oh, we're creative now.
and leaving the same guy in charge of the products. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's interesting. I would say unless this is Pink is getting kicked out and he just doesn't know it yet. I mean, you know, he might think that he's pulling a Sergey and Brin, when he's actually pulling a Steve Jobs. we'll put you in part.
Possible. You know, it's funny. Not in this article, but in another one, they talked about how a lot of these latest rounds of companies going public had the founders retaining a ridiculous amount of control of the company.
Yeah.
And Facebook was one of them. Zynga was another. What was the other one? Groupon was another one. And they were like, well, come to find out, maintaining a ton of control doesn't actually help.
Right.
Because you can still get kicked out. Fancy that.
The thing is that it's, you know, I mean, it's classic Steve Jobs, you know, it's, you know, and Steve Jobs is the it's funny. At the same time, he's the biggest warning to those guys, and he's also the biggest light, because it's like they, you know, everything I've read, you know, you talk to Steve Jobs and it was the greatest travesty that had ever happened. But you talk to anybody that like worked around Steve Jobs and they're like, no, it's the greatest thing that ever happened, because he was a torment. He was terrible. He would cause problems. And by kicking him out and forcing him to grow up, he then developed all of these, you know, he took all the great skills and vision that he had, and then he coupled it with learning how to lead, you know, and it's entirely possible that guys like Pincus, you know, just needed to learn how to lead. Guys like, you know, or they need refinement on what's a good idea and what's not. You know, if you hit lucky without ever really learning that you can come up with bad ideas, sometimes that makes you a little bit what's the word I'm looking for? I can remember. You know, it can make you overly confident in your abilities. And I think that, I don't know.
It's interesting. But according to Wall Street, they're like, woohoo, this is going to be awesome. And it's kind of
I hate Wall Street. They're such a bad predictor of these sorts of things. Like, so often I find them reacting to news. It's like Samsung's, like, you know, their stock is just like taking a beating right now because their Galaxy phones aren't selling as well as they. Well, and actually, it's funny. I actually think like the one time it makes sense for the stock market to react maybe is when people aren't hitting their numbers. And Samsung's not hitting their numbers, but at the same time, like, it's just so short-sighted. They're so short-sighted. It's all about the quick buck. Like, it's just, you know, I think people are buying not because they think this is a good idea, but because they think, you know, the sell-off's going to be soon and they want to own the stock when it's low before the sell-off so that they can, you know, make a quick buck. I don't know. I hope that it works out for them. And, you know, Xbox obviously has done exceedingly well. But at the same time, like Giga was saying, it's a totally different game. You know, excuse the pun. He's not, you know, mobile games are completely different than developing Xbox games and not to mention that Xbox is a piece of hardware and a platform, whereas they're not developing a piece of hardware platform. They're developing, you know, they're developing and buying games and distributing games. I don't know. It's a, you know, he might be the perfect man for the job, but I don't think his success at the Xbox division is necessarily a predictor of success in this division. And I think that, you know, one thing that really drives me nuts is that it's like I had these like crazy layovers and whatnot this last week. And I was joking with you because the Thursday before I left, I spent like 20 minutes standing in front of the 3DS XL And thinking I should buy this because I want it and it sounds like fun. And I was going to buy like the latest Pokemon because I haven't played Pokemon in years. And
yeah.
I don't know. It just sounded like fun. It sounded like a good way to waste a couple of hours. And I didn't, and I kind of regretted it while I was sitting at the airport. I'm glad now that I survived that trip that I didn't spend the $300 on that whole setup.
Yeah.
But while I was sitting in the airport, I was like, maybe I can find an iPad game that'll give me something, you know, an approximation of that experience. And it might have been there, but I had no way of telling. Like, I found that it was very, very, very difficult to figure out what kind of a game I wanted to have. Even the slightest hint of the game I wanted, given the iPad game ecosystem, which was really disappointing because I feel like I could have played hours of some sort of a, you know, dumb role-playing game, and I just wasn't there.
Dumb. Wow.
Well,
but just insert your bias right there.
Well, you know what I mean? I don't know. I could have, I feel like, and I feel like Zynga just, they're fighting a battle. Like it's, you know, how do you, or they're not fighting that battle pretty well. How do you get, I think the major problem is coming up with good, interesting games that people want and then differentiating them, getting them noticed. And nobody has figured out how to do that outside of getting to the top of the top 10 list, which the top 10 list has had the same stupid games on them for the last years. And it's like, if I wasn't intrigued the first time, I'm not going to buy it the second time. And I'm not going to look to the second page of games. And what I'm going to do is not buy a game. And, you know, and especially like, it's funny at $5, I'm in this weird place where I think free games, my experience with free games are terrible. I get like 15 minutes of enjoyment out of them, or they're just really simple games. Even if I play them like to their completion an hour later, and whereas what I really want is a more expansive, fun game, but I don't want to spend $5 on a game that's going to be, it's going to feel cheap and like I wasted my money and my time. So it's like, and so I'm like in this weird place of I want to spend money. I want a game that I have to spend money on, but I don't want to spend the money in until I know I'm going to like the game. That is such a hard place to be, man. You know, and really just better advertising could be the trick. I actually think that's a big part of Zynga's problem, is they do like virtually no advertising for their games. Like, you know, you look at Call of Duty. One of the reasons why people buy Call of Duty is because they do massive marketing campaigns and they make the game look fun. So even before you know, people buy the game before anybody's played it because of marketing, you know, and we bought SimCity because of marketing.
No.
You know, well, you say no, but yes. I mean, it was, you watched the videos that were part of the, you know, that gave you the experience that lets you know what the game is going to be like. And that was a form of marketing. And it gave you an excitement about the game, and you went and bought it. And there's just none of that. There's none of that out of Zynga. I don't care if they have good games or not. I don't have any way of finding the games that I want to play. And because of that, I think they're going to have, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to find success. They got to play the Samsung game, which is build a good phone and then advertise the snot out of it. You know, and build a good game and then advertise it. Give it a budget to actually get it noticed by people so they go out and try it. You know, I think that's the trick, man. But they're not doing that, and I don't have any expectation that will change. You know?
I don't know either. It's possible with this new CEO. He goes, hey, let's try this.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah.
Real quick. I mean it when I say real quick. Twitter is going to start tracking you on the web unless you decide to opt out of it.
Yeah.
Opting out is super easy. Just sign in. Go to settings. You scroll down a little bit. There's a couple checkboxes. Make sure they're unchecked. First one says tailor Twitter based on my recent web visits, and then tailor ads based on information shared by ad partners. Save changes. Otherwise, Twitter will be tracking all the different websites and the things that you do online to make better ads. If you're not interested in that, opt out. That's how you do it.
Interesting. I don't have those checkboxes.
Me neither.
Okay.
Or, well, I mean, I have the boxes. They're just not checked.
No. I don't have the boxes.
Oh, you do.
Where are they? Under settings?
Yeah.
In my account?
On personalization. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, just the very first, like, whatever that... I don't know.
Tweet location, tweet media, tweet privacy, personalization. Oh, there we go.
Wait a second.
I get it. I see it. Yeah, okay. And then promoted content. Tailor ads based on information shared by ad partners.
If you're not interested in personalization and promoted content, uncheck those boxes. You'll be good to go.
Well, tailor ads based on information shared by ad partners. I'm all right with that. That will just give me ads that are... I'm not going to get rid of ads on Twitter. That's just going to give me ads that actually might, you know, have something to do with me.
Right. Sure.
Actually, okay. I'm not going to unclick either of those. They're just going to give me ads that I don't care about. That's stupid. I don't want to...
Okay. I'm whatever. Just not doing it for you.
I appreciate that.
Someone else is interested. I'm not interested in Twitter tracking your web habits outside of the tweet this button.
Well, see, and it's funny. I mean, it's one of those things where they're not. So I have for whatever reason, like, or and it's not even for whatever reason. My logic behind it is, I don't want them selling my content. I want them storing it and doing something good with it. And doing something good with it to me is only giving me interesting information. And that's what they claim that that's what they're doing. Now, if they do that forever, I guess it's a different story. But we'll deal with that when it happens.
Okay. There you go.
Cool.
You got like 2 minutes.
Okay. Samsung bought Boxy. It's kind of like Roku or Apple TV. It's a content sharing streaming box service. Nobody knows what they're going to do with it. I'll bet you a bunch of money that it ends up incorporated into the PlayStation universe in some degree, and the software at least, and probably...
Why PlayStation?
Wow. Tired, man. That's why. Into their smart TVs? Jeez. Thank you for... into their smart TVs and probably into Tenzin or Teos or whatever their new operating system for their smartwatch and phones are going to be, and probably an Android app as well. But, you know, obviously the do whatever Apple's doing but try to do it a little bit faster than them, you know, thing is still in play.
That's their strategy.
It really is. So, you know, and the new Apple TV that I didn't buy an Apple TV today. I'm really proud of myself. I had to sit in an Apple store for an hour while they fixed my phone and didn't buy an Apple TV. Really?
Dang, I'm impressed.
I know. I nearly bought a Mac Mini, though. but the Boxy, yeah. I think it's one of those things that they're just trying to beef up their smart TV strategy and be prepared for whatever Apple's going to be, you know, releasing, whenever they're going to release it. And yeah, that seems the obvious conclusion. And then also, that's all. I almost got to see the landing of the first transcontinental flight of a solar-powered plane. Ooh. But that's because I was at JFK when the airplane crashed in San Francisco. And I was trying to fly to San Francisco. They landed about 20 minutes after I took off, though. So,
oh, you were close.
I know.
That would have been amazing.
It would have been. Actually, the only problem is I had no idea it was happening until today. So I would have. Well, you know what would have happened? I would have gotten onto the podcast and been like, I totally saw it. It was great. It was the greatest thing ever. And just lied to make myself sound cooler. But since there's actual documentation that would prove that I didn't see it, I'm not going to lie to you people.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. But it did. That was pretty cool. Now we can have, and as somebody pointed out, now we have drones that never need to land. So that's exciting.
Yay.
Yeah. Always monitoring.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Good news, everybody.
Funny.
Pretty cool. It's actually, I mean, from a technological perspective and an energy consumption perspective, it's huge, especially because it could fly at night. So it's a big step in that sort of engineering. And you know, I'm sure we'll see more and more of that incorporated as time goes on.
It says it took them 18 hours and 23 minutes.
Yes, sir.
That's a long time.
Huh. It's true. That is a really long time. I would know. That's basically 6 hours less than it took me to get to.
Let's see. Let's just say, theoretically, you had a choice, right? You're flying across the U.S.
Yeah.
Which, would you say it took you 6 hours?
Yeah.
Flight time?
Ish, five-ish.
So, you know, you can do 6 hours. You got to pay for fuel, you know, all that stuff. Kill Mother Earth in the process. Or you could do a solar-powered, you know, alternative energy thing. It's going to take you, like, three times as long. But it's because you're not paying for gas, it's significantly cheaper, like significantly. You know, a third of the cost, maybe even less. Is that something that sounds compelling?
No. Okay. And this is my logic, because I'm either trying to get somewhere, I either have a schedule that I'm trying to keep, unless it's a really, okay, I'll give you, I'm going to have to qualify this. If I'm just trying to get somewhere, I either have a schedule I'm trying to keep, like I'm going on I'm going to work, in which case really long, drawn out, you know, trips, yeah, even if they're cheaper, don't make sense. I mean, that's the reason why we take planes instead of trains. And then, or we're going on vacation, in which case I don't want to spend, you know, 16 hours in the plane. I want to spend that time, you know, where I'm at, in which case, so now I'm hurrying again because I'm on vacation, which again is the same reason we take airplanes instead of trains.
Right. Oftentimes you're traveling. The point is to get there.
Yeah.
Not the trip itself.
Yeah. And so my thought would actually be that the price is at a point where, you know, unless you had a big change in expectations of price, I feel like you're actually at a price point that most people are willing to accept in order to get there at the speed that they're getting there. I think that this would be a good way to lower the cost of, you know, traditional flights, you know, as a hybrid type thing.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
But I don't think that people are going to go, I don't think people are going to switch over to a very slow, but very cheap form of transportation, because those exist and people don't use them. Yeah.
True. Well, and I think part of it, they're just not like extremely cheaper. They're
right.
Still expensive. You know, but if you could get it to where it was just like, whoa, that's a lot cheaper. I know like companies, when they're shipping products, oftentimes they'll go over boat because it's a lot cheaper. It takes a lot longer as opposed to air freight. But
yeah, it's true.
So.
Now, this is an interesting question. Let's go the other direction, if we've got time. How expensive would it be before you wouldn't take advantage of speed savings? Like, let's say you could teleport and you could get there in like 5 minutes. How expensive would it have to be before you'd be like, not worth it, you know, for vacation? What if it were twice as expensive? You know, it's a $600 round trip. You'd pay $1,200 to get there to get to New York in 5 minutes if you had to go there for like work.
Yeah, so we're talking like going with $600 to get to New York, which is expensive, by the way.
No. That's your round trip there and back. $600. Is that expensive?
It's expensive.
Okay, good to know.
That's if you're buying it that week.
Okay. Yeah.
It's $600. If you pay attention, you could do it for half that.
Oh, nice.
But whatever. Let's just say it is $1,200.
Yeah.
Or $1,000. Right.
Okay. I mean, perfect.
Enough where you're gonna pause for half a second before buying the buy button.
Yeah.
I'd like to think. Well, I don't even know. Like 5 minutes. What if you just it cuts the time in half? You know, if we're sticking with this, you can get there in 3 hours or an hour
for $1,000. It's funny to me. I would not go for that.
You're not going to do, if it took you twice as long, it would take you 12 hours, but
yeah,
the cost is like, it's $100. It's $50. Maybe it's a tank of gas.
Yeah.
But it's going to take you 12 hours. you wouldn't do that. You'd rather pay the, you know, the $300.
Oh man.
Take the six-hour flight.
That's actually an interesting one because, you know what, now that you're actually putting times and numbers to it the other direction too, it gives you a little more context because I feel like I wouldn't pay $1,200 for, like, and I think it's better if we just, like, cut it, if we do the doubles and cuts, you know?
Sure.
So it's like it costs twice as much to go half the distance, but it, you know.
Half the time, yeah.
Half the time. So it's going to take 12 hours. It'll cost $150 round trip.
Okay.
It'll take 6 hours. It'll cost $300. Or it'll take, cost $600 to go.
3 hours.
3 hours. Man, that's tough. That's a tough one. I actually would think at that point.
Or for $1,200, you can get there in an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, this is classic supply and demand.
I wasn't even going to bring it up, but it just seems really appropriate. Google launched a HipMunk competitor, essentially. It's a searching thing.
It lists flight times, yeah, but HipMunk is awesome.
Okay, HipMunk is very cool. But what I really like about it is that you don't have to add a destination. You can add dates and your price range. And it will tell you where you can fly to. Yeah, so if you're looking just to get away for the weekend, you don't really care where to, you just want it, you have a budget, that's one of the cool things that it will do.
Because because you were flying, and I was thinking about it, I was like, it would be cool just to like see where could I go in the world. And one of my flight apps updated, and it said it listed on it, it included a list of all arriving and departing flights. And I've often joked, like, walking through the airport with Jesse, I'll be like, want to go to Tanzania instead? And,
yeah.
You know, because you're walking by that gate, and they're loading. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool. Just be like, where are we going today? But
dude, I actually
do that. So, all right, so how do I do this? Let's see here. I am leaving from.
So you want a weird story. I actually sat next to a couple on the way to Heathrow flying out of New York. I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we went to the airport. And with a weekend's worth of clothes and bought round tickets to the first place that seemed interesting. And you picked London? What the heck is wrong with you? Like, whoa, that's awesome. I wish I had that kind of money and free time.
Cool. But, okay, so how do I do this?
So it's pretty easy.
Round trip, Portland, left the tube blank.
Yeah, so two blank, and then pick your dates, whatever you want your dates to be, and then go down to price underneath that. It says any price, and scroll down to your budget. So I'm going to $50. Yeah, and I can't fly anywhere
For $200, I could go to Boise City, Medford. I could go to San Francisco. That's okay. So it shows you the dots. Let's see, can I go anywhere else? Nope. What do the hash lines mean?
The hash lines? I don't know. What are hash lines?
I don't know. Okay, let's spend a little more. $400. You can go to Fairbanks, Alaska. Okay, that's cool. All of
you. That's what I'm saying.
That's kind of cool.
For under $100, man, you can go to Seattle.
They only
show
you the big. Well, I guess they don't need to show you every single airport. Just getting close.
Exactly.
For $400, I can go to Omaha. That's my distance. Or Dallas. So they seem to be implying that I have to spend more to get to New York.
Yeah.
For $600, I can get there.
That's what I'm saying, man. New York.
Takes a little bit to get to Honolulu. Bit of the cheddar. Go to Anchorage. Huh. That's cool. Okay, all right. That's cool. I'll admit it. Yeah,
thank you.
Or I could get a list of flight times. I like it that it's really fast. It doesn't have to be like these searches.
Yeah. I am in complete agreement with you on that.
Okay, all right, all right. This is cool. Google.com/flights. You can see it. Play around with it. I'll admit it. But anyways, yeah, I don't know what I would have to pay to transport or how much I'd be willing to pay to transport faster. If I could, you know, if I could lounge about and if they figured out how to make it reasonably entertaining, I would go for cheaper but longer.
Yeah.
You know, if they've got, like, video on demand, I could do a pretty long flight.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Not worry about it. If they don't have that, I want to pay a little faster.
You know what I could actually I would be able to justify the longer flights with? I'm less about the video on demand, way more about the walking space. If I had more space, I'd actually be willing to pay, you know, I'd be willing to exchange time. Well, I would be, yeah. I don't know what I'd be willing to exchange. I don't have any idea. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Stuff. Well, I mean, and part of it, too, is the average American's vacation is like a week.
Yeah.
Somewhere. And so getting there fast is definitely a premium. If you were going somewhere for like a month, like, yeah, whatever. You know,
yeah,
take a day to get there. I don't care. I'll get there eventually, and it's not going to be a material impact on my vacation.
Right.
You know,
but we don't live in Europe. We live in America because we're free.
Yeah, that's right. We are. Huh, interesting. Cool. That's a cool little service. I like what they're doing. All right, what I would do if it were me, I guess, is I would use this to get my price ranges, and then I would probably head over to HipMunk and look for actual flights because I just like the way they visually display the flights, which knowing Google, they do it to somewhere I just haven't figured it out yet. Because that's what I like about HipMunk is just the way they show the different flights and how to select them and their filters and stuff.
Right.
They also have hotels. Interesting. Google.com/flights. Cool. All right. That's legitimately awesome. I'll probably waste some hours on that one now.
Yes, sir.
Go to Mexico City for $5.22.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Or Cabo San Lucas for $4.39. I can do that for cheaper.
Yeah, don't do that, man. Get it as part of the holistic, all-inclusive, man. That was the way to do it.
That's what I hear. I like it. Hey, man. Good podcast. Welcome back. Glad to be in America on this 4th of July weekend where we're celebrating freedom from technological tyranny and the British.
Yeah, who are coming.
Yeah, not anymore. Not anymore. They're on board.
Well, not to mention the fact that at that point, technically, we were British too.
Shh.
Yeah.
But I gotta think about that. So cool, man. I appreciate it. Like I said, I am. It's summertime, so I will be traveling the next two Sundays.
Oh man.
I think I'll actually be in Colorado next Sunday. I gotta figure out how we're gonna do this, but. I don't know. There just may not be any show cuts because you may have to do all the processing.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I'm not very good at that.
We'll see. We'll figure it out. No big deal. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow, and my traveling salesman brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Google Flights.
Yeah, man.
What's the most
cool.
They'll let me spend? Any price. $14.50. Where can I go for $14.50?